Like to give us a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure, Pete. I'm a medical herbalist, and I've been calling myself that since about 2002. I started my studies in 97.
Mm-hmm.
And generally with being an herbalist in this country, there's no like formal four-year program. Actually, there is one or two, but most herbalists get their knowledge through apprenticeships and through doing one-year program. So I did a couple one-year full-time programs in herbal medicine,
mm-hmm.
did a couple apprenticeships,
mm-hmm.
Went to India a little bit and studied,
mm-hmm.
and then I got a job with WTS Med, which I've been here for about 4 years now.
So WTS is the Wilson's Temperature Syndrome?
Exactly. Yeah, we're all, our other name is Restorative Formulations, and that's
okay.
our kind of our professional side, and WTS Med is the retail side of the company.
And who is Wilson, and what is the temperature syndrome?
Sure, Dr. Dennis Wilson, he lives down in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and he discovered that, you know, there's a lot of people that present with low thyroid symptoms, like fatigue and low body temperature, dry skin, etc., but when they go to the doctor and have their thyroid tested, it comes up normal.
Mm-hmm.
Their TSH is normal, their T4 and T3 are normal, but they're still, you know, plagued by these symptoms, and with WTS or Wilson's Temperature Syndrome, there's no other explanation. You look into other possible causes for low body temperature, like anemia or chronic infections or heavy metal toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you rule those out, and you can rule out undertreated or untreated hypothyroidism, then it's kind of diagnosis of exclusion. Then the doctors start thinking, well, maybe this is Wilson's Temperature Syndrome.
And just for myself and the guests, I always confuse hypo and hyperthyroidism. So hypo
sure.
is?
It's a slow thyroid.
Okay.
It's when the thyroid gland is not producing enough thyroid hormone.
I see. And so that, you're saying, can be a cause for body temperature to be low?
Yeah, either hypothyroidism or Wilson's Temperature Syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And the symptoms of that, besides low body temperature, are, of course, you know, a lot of people feel cold, but not always. Actually, it's interesting. A lot of people will have, their body temperature will be 96, and they'll feel warm. So the feeling cold is usually goes along with low body temperature, but not always. And then there's often fatigue and thinning of the eyebrows, the lateral portion of the eyebrows, hair loss on the head, weight gain. Really, like the Wilson's Temperature Syndrome symptoms pretty much mimic hypothyroid symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a diagnosis of exclusion. You have to rule out hypothyroidism first before a doctor would start thinking Wilson's.
Okay. And so what is the difference between Wilson's and hypothyroidism?
Well, I would say that nobody really knows exactly what's going on with Wilson's. It really hasn't been studied extensively. There's theories out there, and the dominant theory is that there's an issue with the peripheral conversion of the T4 thyroid hormone to T3. So just let me explain a little bit.
Sure.
The thyroid gland produces mostly T4 thyroid hormone, which is pretty much like a proto-hormone. It's pretty weak, and it needs to be converted in certain tissues of the body, especially the liver and kidneys, to a stronger form called T3.
Mm-hmm.
T3 is about four times more potent than T4. So there's a theory that there's some kind of issue with that conversion. And you know, there is a good biological reason for that. It seems like this conversion issue, the slowing down of the conversion of T4 to T3 is triggered by periods of stress, which could be physical stress or mental stress.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about, like, evolutionarily, it makes sense because our ancestors, when they were undergoing a lot of physical or mental stress, they often often coincided with not having a lot of food.
Mm.
And not a lot of calories to maintain their weight. So it made sense that the body, during those stressful periods, would slow down the metabolism by slowing down the conversion of T4 to T3. So that's one of the major, it seems like it's one of the major triggers for Wilson's, is that it's some major stress. I mean, often you see people who went through a divorce or a serious car accident, or they lost their home or their job, or there was often something that kind of got the hall ball rolling, and they'll say, ever since that happened, I haven't been feeling right, and these symptoms have been getting worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. So the difference between the Wilson's and the hypothyroid is that the Wilson's is your thyroid is producing the hormones properly, but they're not being converted properly in another part of the body.
That's the theory. That's the dominant theory. There's also a theory that it's almost like a resistance. It is getting converted,
mm-hmm.
but then after it's converted, it has to the T3 hormone has to go into the cells and cause its metabolic changes. And then there's a theory that it could be a problem with the T3 hormone being recognized, kind of like type 2 diabetes, where insulin isn't recognized by the cells of the body.
Well, I appreciate how your practice is recognizing that it's not sure about what the things are, because there's so much we know so little about, but sometimes don't want to admit to.
Yeah, you know, and talking about not knowing a whole lot, I'll give a disclaimer. I'm definitely not an endocrinologist. I'm not a physician.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been talking to doctors and studying Wilson's for 4 years. So mm-hmm. my scope is pretty limited when it comes to endocrinology.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't profess to be an expert. I just profess to be trying to understand the thyroid system and doing my best to share the knowledge that I have.
So when patients are come to see someone about feeling fatigued and maybe having dry skin or feeling cold or not, how are they diagnosed?
Well, the doctor, hopefully, you know, you would hope that your doctor would do a thorough examination. You know, whatever diagnostic tools they have, they would use.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, since the symptoms of Wilson's are similar to hypothyroidism, the first thing that has to be explored, or the first thing that doctors usually explore, is does this person have hypothyroidism? And that's determined by a test.
Mm-hmm.
So they usually start out with testing TSH. That's a thyroid-stimulating hormone.
And that would be a blood test?
That's a blood test, yeah. So they test the TSH, and if it's out of a certain range, the range is a little debatable.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now it's kind of like the range is 0.3 to 3.0 is considered within the optimal range, and you'll probably, if you study this topic, find a lot of opinions about that. Some people say 0.5 all the way to 6.0, so it really depends on who you speak to.
Mm-hmm. And then once hypothyroidism is ruled out, then what's the next step?
Well, I think it's important to be really thorough and not to jump to conclusions. So, you know, we're aware of other reasons for fatigue and low body temperature and some of these other symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, certainly look into whether it's a nutritional issue. The person can be deficient in iodine. I mean, that was like one of the main reasons for a long time in human history why people would start displaying symptoms of hypothyroidism is because they didn't have enough iodine in their diet. So it's a little bit rare these days, but there certainly are a lot of people who are deficient in iodine.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to look into that. And then anemia has a lot of the same symptoms. So certainly you have to look into whether the person is iron deficient.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that chronic infections like Lyme disease and chronic prostatitis and candida infections can low body temperature, create fatigue, and you know, the brain fog and all these symptoms are similar with those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor would really want to, you know, look around, do a thorough examination, and then if they could not find anything else, and they would start speculating that it's Wilson's.
Uh-huh.
And then really, and you take it a step further, you do a therapeutic trial of T3 hormone. If the doctor suspects it's Wilson's, then they would give T3 therapy, and there's a certain protocol which I can describe, but I'll let you. Should I do that now, or should I,
I just had other
questions?
I just had one quick question about if someone is not eating iodized salt and you're living not by the ocean. Are there any inland foods that are high in iodine that you could recommend?
Oh, that's interesting.
For the local vore?
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of certainly like seaweeds and stuff like that, but as far as any inland foods that are high in iodine, I think it really depends on the soil conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the vegetables and grains and such, they'll take up iodine from the soil, but the iodine has to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain parts of the country, like the upper Midwest, where the soils have traditionally been depleted in iodine.
Mm-hmm.
So in those areas in particular, someone might have a hard time getting enough iodine in their diet without supplementing it with, you know, iodized salt doesn't really have a lot, but like seaweeds or seafood or just taking potassium iodide or iodine supplements.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really depends on where you are. There are certain parts of the country, probably, you know, more towards the coast where there's, you know, a lot of nutritionists would say that there's sufficient iodine in the soil. And as long as you eat, you know, I would probably fruits and vegetables that are grown organically,
mm-hmm.
Because the soils tend to be richer in macro and micronutrients with organics,
mm-hmm.
You probably have a better chance of getting sufficient iodine. But when you're inland, especially in the upper Midwest, I think it might be a lot harder just through, you know, a normal local diet.
Now, you're going to explain the process of taking the T3, but has the doctor taken the patient's temperature, or does that come after the T3 treatment?
No, the temperature is one of the determinants of whether or not someone has Wilson. So that's the main thing. It's, you know, it's the symptoms that I mentioned: fatigue, dry skin, weight gain, hair loss, eyebrow thinning, brain fog. It doesn't have to be all those symptoms, but
mm-hmm.
you know, if they have a good amount of those symptoms, plus they have a low body temperature,
mm-hmm.
you know, averaging below 98.6, then the doctor would suspect it was Wilson.
So that would be, what's the range for below 98.6? I mean, anything below that?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to people, I mean, I'm a little bit incredulous when I hear people say, like, their temperature averages 93.
Mm-hmm.
But people claim that, and I would say, you know, 95s, 96s, and 97s. Are a lot more common with people who are diagnosed with Wilson's.
Mm-hmm.
So, and usually the severity of the symptoms correspond to the temperature. So the lower the temperature, the more severe the symptoms will be.
Okay. And does a Wilson's do anything with temperature that's above that, or that just tends to be some kind of infection or fever?
Oh, you mean above 98.6?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if it was above 98.6, the therapy would be contraindicated.
I see.
I mean, sometimes people have just a very transient temperature, and it could be a fever, it could be related to ovulation,
mm-hmm.
In women. But barring that, you wouldn't want to do the Wilson's protocol. You would look, you know, to other causes for the symptoms.
Thank you. Now if, you could explain the T3 procedure.
Sure. The basic T3 procedure is using T3 hormone, and you're using it in a slow release form.
Mm-hmm.
So it's slowly released in the body over 12 hours. And so what happens is the pharmacy will give the patient a starter pack, and there'll be all different doses, like 7.5 micrograms, 15 micrograms, 30, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And what the patient will do is they'll take the T3 exactly 12 hours apart, so say 9 in the morning and 9 in the evening,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be increasing their dose by 7.5 micrograms every day. So the first day they would be doing 7.5 and then 7.5 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
The second day, 15 in the morning, 15 in the evening. The third day, 22.5 in the morning, and then again in the evening, and so forth. And they would be increasing the dose every day unless they had some kind of negative side effect, like heart palpitations or sped up heart rate above, you know, if their pulse rate was above 100 beats per minute, mm-hmm. then they would want to maybe not go up.
Mm-hmm.
And some people even need to go down at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But most people tolerate it, especially if they are screened for pre-existing heart conditions. Most people tolerate it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go up every day until they reach 98.6 body temperature or until they reach 75 micrograms twice a day of the T3. So if they reach 98.6, then they're going to plateau for a little while and try to hold that temperature. And Dr. Wilson calls that capturing the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't reach 98.6 and they're at 75 micrograms, and they just start weaning down every other day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you know, with most medicines, doctors would often recommend kind of starting slowly and building up to a higher dose.
Mm-hmm.
But and a lot of doctors are tempted to increase the dose every other day or every third day, so they would want to do like 7.5 micrograms for a few days and then 15, but we generally don't recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we don't want the body to have a chance to compensate to the increased dose of T3. There's a whole other kind of can of worms that opens up when you do that. So we try to kind of outpace the body's ability to, because what happens is every time you increase the dose of thyroid hormone, the body will try to decrease its own production.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to overdo it a little bit. So that means if you don't outpace the body's ability to compensate, then it'll kind of be a rocky ride with the protocol. The person would, you know, they'd feel good for a couple of days and their body temperature would slip a little bit and their symptoms would come back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the body would overcompensate. So we're increasing every 24 hours to try to outpace that.
Very interesting. Now, how does the T3 relate to Synthroid?
Synthroid is T4.
I see.
And that is not, it's usually not giving in a slow release form. It hits the blood all at once,
mm-hmm.
which usually isn't a problem because, like I said, it's more like a proto-hormone. For it to reach its maximum potency, it has to be converted to T3. But T3 is the potent hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful about not, you know, giving a high dose and allowing it to absorb into the bloodstream all at once. That can be problematic. The person can have heart palpitations, sped up heart rate. They can feel very uncomfortable. So we want to try to get into their blood very slowly.
Now, once the person's blood temperature has normalized to the 98.6, then what's the next step?
Oh, well, then, you know, and often this happens when they're at the higher doses of T3, but not always. So then you're trying to hold that.
Mm-hmm.
So you would, and kind of get the body used to being at that higher body temperature. And it's a very, I would say, invigorating experience for a lot of people who have had low body temperature. And they often want to stay on T3 for a while because they feel so good. Not always. Some people actually, the T3 can cause some issues, you know, and make people feel a little uncomfortable, so they don't always feel great. But a lot of people feel great and want to stay on it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So generally we recommend staying, you know, trying to hold the temperature at 98.6 for 3 weeks at that particular dose, whatever dose they capture it on. So
mm-hmm.
if they're at, you know, if they're at 30 micrograms of T3, then they just want to stay at 30 for 3 weeks. And then they would start to slowly wean down. And if their temperature started slipping when they were weaning down, then they would slow it even more. They would try every other day, but if the temperature starts slipping, then every third day or fourth day or even every week.
And so after they've done that for 3 weeks, are they trying to get off of it? Or what's going to keep the...
Yeah, no, exactly. This is not something that... You know, this is a restorative therapy. It's not a remedial therapy where they'd have to be on it for the rest of their life. We really don't want people to have to be on the hormones for the rest of their life. They're strong medicines, and they cost money, and it's always better if you can get the body to be restored to a, you know, a state of health and be able to take care of business on its own.
So is the theory of what's happening now, you're getting the body used to this, and then the body will respond by producing the hormone on its own?
Yeah, well, it's theorized that the T3, the protocol, it kind of gets a little complicated with talking about even more hormones. I've introduced two, but there's another one called reverse T3. And so the theory goes that reverse T3 can build up in the system, and reverse T3 blocks T3 from blocks the conversion of T4 to T3, and also kind of occupies the receptors and blocks actual T3 from being received by the cells. So the theory is that the protocol helps deplete the reverse T3.
Oh, I see.
And when that is taken away, then the T3 can do what it needs to do in the body.
And so then at that, do you wean off the amount that you're on to get back to taking no T3?
Exactly, yeah. And it's a process of cycling up and down. Most people will capture their temperature within 3 to 6 cycles. Some people, just one cycle. And some people will take 10 cycles, but most people 3 to 6. And so, you know, each cycle takes approximately 1 month.
And so once they've completed the 3 to 6 cycles, or however many cycles it takes for them to get normalized, that's the end of the treatment?
Yep, that's it. They wean off. Now, there are other, they wean off, like I said, slowly, anywhere from every other day to every 7 days. And then hopefully that would be it. They would be feeling better. You know, often people have other health issues too that might be causing symptoms. So it's not like they be necessarily feeling like they're on top of the world. But we hear a lot of really positive stories about how people are able to have more energy, and if they had skin conditions, they often improve. Hair loss. Weight gain issues, the eyebrows sometimes come back a little bit, and they generally just feel a greater sense of well-being.
And the name of the company is Restorative?
Yeah, we have two names. I think our official company name is WTS Med, and that stands for Wilson's Temperature Syndrome Med, as in medical. And we have a website, WTSmed.com. And then the other part of our company is Restorative Formulations, because we sell herbal products to help support people with Wilson's, but also a lot of other conditions. And so we sell the products on WTS Med. We have like a retail line. Often those products are very effective, but they're not as potent as the wholesale line, the line we sell to doctors. And the wholesale website is restorativeformulations.com.
So for the T3, is that something that's sold through the website?
No, it isn't. We don't sell T3.
I see.
We educate about Wilson's, and we educate about using T3. But we work with a pharmacy called MedAlse Pharmacy. They're in Alabama. And they're also on the line, MedHouse.com, and they make the starter packs. They've worked very closely with Dr. Wilson they were the ones that helped originally develop the slow-release T3 and get it so that it released very precisely over a 12-hour period, which is very important with this protocol. If the T3 isn't prepared correctly, then it could be a bumpier ride. We want T3 is strong medicine, and we want the person to have it as smooth as possible as an experience while they're doing the protocol.
Right. You had mentioned earlier about the theory of the T3 not being, or that It would be the T4 not being properly converted in the liver and kidneys?
Yeah.
Is there anything that the restorative formulations do to help liver and kidney function?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. There have been studies done on certain herbs that seem to point to them improving that T4 to T3 conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those herbs we added to a couple of our formulas, that's called Google. G-U-G-G-U-L, not Google like, you know, the big net company.
Right.
But I think it's called, the botanical name is Commifera, C-O-M-M-I-F-E-R-A.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Mukel, M-U-K-U-L, but don't quote me on that.
And what part of the world is this from?
I believe mostly India.
Oh, I see.
And there's a system of medicine that comes from India called Ayurveda. And they love Google. They use it for a lot of different things. There are studies that show that it helps to balance cholesterol levels in the body.
Mm-hmm.
In Ayurveda, they use it for both hyper and hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
And they also use it for arthritis and different types of joint pains as well. It's one of the main therapies for arthritis. So
mm-hmm.
it's just one of those herbs that has a lot of tricks up its sleeve.
Right.
And they've been using it for a long time, and I'd say there's a lot of faith, but a lot of experience with people having success using that herb. So we put that in our ThyroCare, in our Thyroid PX formula.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that Google is known to do is increase the uptake of iodine in the thyroid gland.
Oh.
So it helps make the thyroid gland more efficient in pulling in iodine. And iodine is used to make thyroid hormones, so it's essential for the thyroid system.
This may be too complicated a question, but does Google do anything to help your thyroid if the iodine is being blocked by intake of fluoride or halides, different things like that would block the iodine absorption?
Yeah. I would imagine that it would,
mm-hmm.
But I'm not exactly sure. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, if fluoride or halides or heavy metals are causing the issue, then if that's the cause, then you'd want to take care of it.
Still there? We were talking about cleaning up the heavy metals from the body, if that's the...
Yeah, heavy metals, and also I was starting to talk about using iodine to actually displace the bromides and chlorides and the other halides, like fluoride. Since, you know, they displace iodine, but iodine displaces them, too.
Oh, very interesting.
You can get more iodine if someone, you know, thinks they've been exposed to those chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the main therapies for it.
The only iodine source that I've heard about that's inland is black walnut hulls.
Oh.
So, and it's... if you squeeze the juice of it, it's this very dark brown staining kind of stuff, like iodine.
Yeah, it's gross. They use black walnut for parasites, and almost any herbal medicine that's used for parasites is completely disgusting. They're usually really bitter and very unpleasant.
Uh-huh.
I've taken black walnut.
What kind of restorative formulations would someone use with Wilson's, or would they take the restorative formulations before they did the T3, or would they do it after the T3, or they wouldn't?
No, that's a good point.
Combine them.
Well, for mild to moderate conditions, a lot of doctors will not even use T3. They'll just use the supplements.
Okay.
And that's especially in Canada, because we have a lot of doctors we work with in Canada, and they have less access to T3.
Okay.
You know, Health Canada is... I think that Health Canada is a lot actually stricter than the FDA,
mm-hmm.
and they limit a lot. They limit doctors, especially naturopathic doctors, and they kind of keep certain things away from them. I think they're way too strict, and they often, the people who are enforcing the laws don't really understand the substances they're enforcing, but that's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of doctors will recommend ThyroCare or Thyroid PX, and they have the Google that I mentioned. And Thyroid PX also has 6 milligrams of iodine per capsule.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of iodine, and but some people respond very well to high doses of iodine, especially for a short period of time, like 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Iodine can build up in the body and reach kind of a tipping point to where once it was making the person feel very well, it suddenly makes them feel kind of hyperthyroid, like they might start getting nervous and feel hot and have trouble sleeping, and their heart might start racing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important if the person is taking Thyroid PX or some other form of iodine, and it's, you know, more than, I'd say, a milligram a day,
mm-hmm.
then they'd have to, you know, sort of be closely monitored to make sure that they're not experiencing any of these unpleasant symptoms. And if they are, they'd want to wean down, maybe not down to zero, but back off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I certainly know a lot of people who do high doses of iodine. I've been doing it for years and claim they feel great on it. So, you know, everybody's different, and I think it's really important to treat everybody like an individual and not like a statistic.
Mm-hmm. Is there a restorative formulation for people with hyperthyroidism?
There is a formula. You know, I can't really say that the formulas treat a specific disease. That's
uh-huh.
an FDA sort of gag order on me.
Okay.
So, not on me in particular, but on everybody.
Right.
Nobody who sells an herbal supplement can say that that supplement will help with a particular disease, even if it seems like there's a lot of evidence to support that.
I see.
There's a certain process with the FDA where you have to jump through their hoops, and it can be very expensive, and only those who can patent a substance and make a lot of profit on it really can afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't patent an herb. Anyway, I'll just say from an educational perspective that doctors report to me that they use certain of our formulas to treat their hyperthyroid patients.
Mm-hmm. And is Synthroid something that's for hyper or hypothyroidism?
Synthroid is used for hypothyroidism.
And so if someone wanted to switch from Synthroid to one of your restorative formulations, how do they change? They don't just stop taking their Synthroid one day and take your formulation the next, or do they integrate the two?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, some people are on Synthroid and they're really non-hypothyroid, but they presented with hypothyroid symptoms and they went to their doctor and they just gave them Synthroid so they'd feel better. And they might have felt better for a while, but then they might start feeling worse.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, someone might be able to wean off of their Synthroid. I mean, we don't recommend kind of replacing any pharmaceutical with our products.
Mm-hmm.
They work differently. Our products are generally designed to be restorative. That generally takes time. And the drugs, you know, might take minutes or hours to start taking effect.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wean off of something that took minutes or hours to cause an effect, and you go on something that takes months to cause an effect, or at least weeks,
mm-hmm.
then there's going to be a period where the person feels very unwell.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't recommend that. And furthermore, if someone really has hypothyroidism,
mm-hmm.
there's a good chance that it's, you know, it's a type of hypothyroidism called Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune condition. And in that condition, the thyroid gland gets damaged.
Mm.
Not always, but it's often that if it's caught early, sometimes it's not, but it often gets damaged by the immune system. And sometimes almost completely destroyed, so where the body, the thyroid gland, will basically be not producing any useful thyroid hormone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of any herbal or natural therapy that can restore a damaged thyroid gland. It seems like we're able to improve the functioning of whatever tissue is left over.
Mm-hmm.
So people will report, a lot of doctors tell me that they were able to get their patients to wean back a bit on their thyroid hormones, and they, at the same time, they feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to point to the fact that some of these herbs are actually improving the functioning. You know, I talked about Google increasing the iodine uptake. Well, that would improve functioning because iodine is absolutely necessary for the production of thyroid hormones. As long as there is a thyroid gland that has, you know, as long as there's still some thyroid tissue that's producing thyroid hormone, mm-hmm. then it's going to need iodine. So if you give something that improves the absorption of iodine, you would think that that would improve the production of hormones.
When I had Mikhail Friedman on before, I told him this, and I'll also relate the story to you. I was reading on a forum of Susan Weed, the herbalist, about a woman who had overactive thyroid, so the doctors gave her radioactive iodine to damage the thyroid so it produced less. And then she realized later that she needed more thyroid function, and she used stinging nettle to repair the damaged thyroid tissue.
Wow.
So it's anecdotal, but maybe something worth investigating.
Well, stinging nettle has a lot of minerals in it. And, you know, besides iodine, there's a lot of other minerals, especially selenium, that the thyroid system needs in order to function properly. So I don't really know if nettles has selenium, but I'm kind of grasping at straws to figure how nettles did the job.
Sure.
Or maybe it was, you know, like you said, it's anecdotal, it's just one case.
Mm-hmm. But there must be some people who are currently on pharmaceuticals who would rather do something restorative to their body. Do they tend to take your formulations while they're a while before they get off their medication, so it begins to build up in their body, and then cut back on their pharmaceuticals?
Or generally yes, and often the patients will cut back on the pharmaceuticals in relation to how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
So they start feeling better, then they'll probably start cutting back.
I see.
And we always advise that they work with a qualified, knowledgeable healthcare practitioner.
And so who would be a qualified practitioner in that case? Would you want some kind of a specialist in thyroid function? Could it be your general practitioner?
Well, sometimes it's, you know, a general practitioner or an endocrinologist. It's working along with somebody who's been trained in using herbs and supplements.
Mm-hmm.
So you would want somebody who understands both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you know, it makes it a lot easier. If you have an MD who doesn't understand herbs, and you have a naturopath or an herbalist or an acupuncturist who doesn't understand thyroid hormones,
mm-hmm.
then they're not speaking the same language, and often there is going to be strife and misunderstanding, and the patient is going to be taken for a rocky ride.
Mm-hmm.
But if they both understand each other's language, that they can speak to each other, sometimes speak to each other through the patient, but that's fine. As long as there's clear communication, everybody knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So people may be able to find out where they can get their general practitioner, an endocrinologist. Where can they find someone who's versed in herbal treatments?
Generally, you know, any naturopathic doctor
mm-hmm.
Has extensive training in herbal medicine. Any acupuncturist will have extensive training. Any herbalist who went to at least a one-year program full-time is going to have good training. And, you know, like I was saying earlier with my experience as an herbalist, you want to know that they've studied for at least a few years full time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want them to be treating your health in a serious way. I mean, certainly there are a lot of community herbalists that, you know, have less training and can help you navigate through a cold or the flu, or, you know, help you with herbal first aid. But when it comes to, like, guiding you through you know, often a multi-month or multi-year process
mm-hmm.
of trying to restore your health, you want somebody who has a good bit of clinical experience and also somebody who's studied pretty extensively.
So if you can combine those two, the medical doctor, the naturopathic doctor, and get the restorative formulations, you may be able to switch from your current hormones to restorative formulations.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people come to their doctor and want to try something new because they're not feeling well on the hormones. Mm-hmm. If they're feeling great and everything's working for them, there's really no reason to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if they're feeling poorly, and often what happens is they feel poorly and their MD can't offer them anything else. So they need to look elsewhere, and mm-hmm. they start looking to herbal medicine and maybe acupuncture and changing their diet and exercising and other things other than taking these hormones.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you'd like to mention that I didn't ask you about?
I think that we covered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, yeah, if there's any questions, I'm here to answer them.
I think you've covered everything on my side of the telephone, so I thank you very much for your time today.
All right. It's good talking to you.
Same here.
Take care.
You too.
Bye. Bye.